Hello, shortwave fans, and welcome to episode 13 of the UVB 76 and Number Stations podcast. I'm Web Weasel, your host, and tonight, as always, I have my regular hosts, Danix.
Hello, my regular host. A long time.
Say hello again, Danix. I'll edit.
Hello, after a long time.
And I have Grasp.
Здравствуйте.
And we have Troyan.
Hello.
4D will be joining us soon. Bowen sends his apologies, and we hope to have Larson back at the next episode. Okay, so let's start tonight. Great to have you back with us, Shortwave fans. This is the start of Season 2 of the podcast, because we're now in the second year of Freon. February was our anniversary. That was our year's anniversary, and we're entering our second year now, so we're starting off the second season of the podcast, because we have had a bit of a hiatus. It's been more than 4 months since we last put out an episode, so we would like to apologise for that. But, you know, we've all got busy lives, and it can be difficult to organise people from all over the world, from Russia to America, to be on at the same time. Hence, we haven't got 4D with us right now, but he will be joining at some point in this episode. There's been number of activity on all the stations in the last 4 or 5 months. We've got a lot to cover in this episode. And we shall start it off as usual with our coverage of the buzzer and what it's been up to over the last 4 months. Anyone want to kick off with that, or shall I do it?
You can kick into it, man, and I'll add in with the stuff I've got.
Okay, great. December was a pretty quiet month in 2011 for the buzzer. We didn't see anything more than regular typical activity, with nothing really noteworthy being mentionable. Things got a bit more interesting in January, although I think we should say as a whole, activity for 2012 has been greatly reduced compared to 2011 from what we've seen so far. There's been much longer periods between messages, perhaps only 2 or 3 a week on average at the very most, but we're still experiencing our particularly busy days where we have a whole burst of messages at once, including 2 so far this year in January and just the other day at the end of March, when we had a day with, I believe, 11 messages with odd formats and new call signs in January, and 18 messages just the other day. Groff, do you want to tell us about the 18 messages the other day?
Yeah, well, it started off pretty early in the morning. I think the first one was something past... It was past five. It was 5, 6, or 7.
10 to 6, I think it was, in the morning.
That's the one. So really, really early. You don't get them often that early. It's not unheard of, you know, but it's still pretty rare. I was still asleep by this point. Avaya was on the IRC. He was logging them all. When I woke up, I had work pretty early, so I got out of bed at, I think, 6:15 or something. Went straight on the IRC because there was loads of pinging going on where I'm getting highlight from all the boss calls, and I see there's been 7 messages already or something like that, and Avaya's logging them, and I managed to catch 2 before I went to work anyway. And there were some particularly interesting ones. We saw a new format, and we saw 3 new call signs. Yep, 3 new call signs. I'll start with the new call signs because they're easy to cover anyway. There was basically 1 message for 1 new call sign, which was 2BYP. That would be our transliterations of them anyway. It'd be, I think they're Dvojka, Boris, Iri, Pavel. And then we have another message that was given... Oh, sorry, also that message had 2 headers, and then the rest of the format was normal. Then we had a message earlier on in the day for 2 new call signs in the same message, also with 2 headers. The call signs were Znak, Boris, Dvojka, Mikhail, and Kharaton, Nikolai, Voismyorka, Simyorka. And then, again, it went on to 2 headers, then a word, and then the normal numbers. Interesting to note, every single message out of the... It was, 18. Every single message, the second letter was O. So, again, it backs up the realisation. I believe it was Linas who realised it first. Whoever. No, was it not?
Larson.
That's it. I knew it was Linas or Larson. Or I was thinking Cat for some reason, but I know Cat spends more of his time on our underground stuff, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, props to Larson on that recognition, because it's definitely right. I mean, 18 messages in one day, second letter's always the same. It's always an O, so fair enough to him. And then the new format we had was a particularly interesting thing because it involved the call sign of another station that S28 calls for, that one being Olga, Yelena, Ulyana, Nikolai. That particular call sign had a message given for it with two headers later on in the day, but earlier there were two messages given for MDigibit, and the messages included that call sign after MDigibit was read twice, but they were only read once, so it's not read for that unit as a call sign. You can see this as well, the following numbers after OEUN was read out, 4705, which is what goes with the command we've seen in January. The new format then was no header, no heading numbers, then the word itself, and then either four sets of numbers or only two sets of numbers. What we're seeing here is a message for MDGB, the first message of which is the call sign of another unit, so it's something to do with that unit. And then it's got two commanding figures after it, like we saw back in January. No header, two commanding numbers. The same messages, after giving that, then went on to give a header, and then a normal message, and then four commanding numbers afterwards. So it's odd that we got two of these messages as well, so it backs up the fact that the reading of OEUN only once wasn't a mistake. It's definitely not for both units. And more proof of that as well is the other message we had that was for the two new call signs. Both call signs were repeated twice, and there was two headers given instead of two command numbers. So some interesting stuff going on there. It was definitely, from what I can figure anyway, something to do with having that transmission given out for that call sign, OEUN, later on in the day, which again had two headers in it. So some interesting stuff going on with the buzz this month anyway. And the activity does seem to be picking up. It kind of died off a little bit towards the end of last year and early this year, but it is beginning to pick up again now. So let's see where we go from there with it. But that's this month's coverage. Anyway, there hasn't really been anything else of major significance this month. There's been a couple of outages. The lines on the buzzer, the phone lines, aren't very good anymore. There's been a lot of noise from the phone lines, especially lately. You can hear the phone lines really opening, and there's a lot of distortion just while the buzzer's actually on and stuff. There's a lot of transmitted noise as well. So we're probably going to start seeing outages again soon.
When those telephone beeps have been happening, we've not actually heard any conversation this time round. It's just been the routing tones, and the one that I particularly noticed the other day was I heard the purring tone of the old telephone systems. A couple of you are probably too young to remember this, but up until the mid-90s in the UK, when you picked up your phone, instead of getting a beep dial tone, you got a purr dial tone. I'll look up a sample and put that in now, because I should be able to find one of those online. But I was very interested to hear that old telephone style system.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's called a pulse dial. I think that's what pulse dial systems are.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to hear that. And also just the actual phone line itself opening, so as if the phone's not on the hook properly, or maybe it's been knocked, and you hear the receiver shuffle about sometimes. And that's happened lately. And the line's been left open, so there's a big sort of hum going on in the background from the open line. But again, we haven't heard any conversation, crucially, while the line's been open. So it seems whoever's been operating the buzzer's been quite lonely lately.
I'd probably put forward the suggestion for that there's an engineer operating on the telephone switch, and as he's changing connections and fiddling about the stuff, he's accidentally opened a line that's not actually connected to anything. So that's why we've not heard any voice.
It could be the case. It seems like there's been some playing about going on with the buzzer lately. Again, there's been outage periods. There was that odd time that Avar caught, where Olga picks up the phone and says, "Hello," a couple of times while the buzz is still going on. So they're obviously testing the lines from time to time. And there's been quite a spate of that activity lately. So obviously, you know, radio stuff fails, and old stuff especially fails. And if they're using pulse-style phones, then, they've got quite fail-prone systems, I think. So we're bound to catch stuff like this all the time, I think.
Yeah, I think it's not a surprise to realise that the military use older, proven and reliable technology. So it's not a surprise to hear older equipment tones and so on, because this stuff has a proven track record of being fixable, repairable and reliable in situations. So I think it's a lesson to take from that.
Yeah, that's right, because it's all old stuff, you know. It's not all crazy surface mount components and things. It's just old analog shit that you can just buy and just plug into stuff, and it's no problem. Built to last sort of stuff, so it's built to fix when it does finally go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you and I have had some experience with military cross radios recently, haven't we? What with the pre-on visit we had the last month or so. And it's been really interesting to see the quality of the hardware compared to the kind of radios that you get in the domestic market.
Yeah, indeed. It's an entirely different kettle of fish. Entirely different, you know. Even the features of the radios are 1,000 times better. But even things like the squelch, you know, and the RF gains, just far better than any handset you'll get, you know. So it might be old equipment, but it's damn good. So it's why they'll keep it. I don't think we'll hear, you know, digital technology is going on all too much with such systems, such units even.
Yeah, there's a big difference. When you're using any kind of SDR and digital technology, no matter what, you're restricted by a sampling rate, which means you're so many times per second, you're taking a brief snapshot of the sound and then recompiling that from digital information back to analog again when it's played back through the speakers. So there's an inherent loss of information and loss of quality. And I was really shocked when listening to that analog system that we were using together a couple of weeks back, just how good the sound quality was. And how amazing the reception was compared to the digital equipment and the SDRs that I've been using up till now. It's really taught me a lesson about radio.
Yep, it's totally different. SDRs are brilliant, brilliant things. You can't knock them, but they've got nothing on a really good analog rig. Nothing really does it. That's a proper radio, you know. It just doesn't get better than a nice big fucking Racal unit or something. Pardon my French, but it's... Yeah, it's better than any sort of SDI, you know. Even Lade's new SDI, which I hear gets pretty, you know, pretty good. But no, nothing beats a good old-fashioned big analog unit. And as for all of the different buzzer messages and formats and call signs we've spoken of today, obviously we'll splice those messages in post-production too.
Yep, of course. One last thing to mention on the buzzer before we move on. I know it's been a short section on the buzzer, but as we say, the activity's been fairly light over the last 4 months, and we've only had two particularly interesting days to really comment on. The other thing that has been noticeable was 3 or 4 days back, we had buzzer parasitic signals on its usual parasitic signals of, say,
six, seven.
The parasitic was up there again, but in a way that we've never seen it before. Usually when we see the parasitic, it's very distorted and the carrier is often very faint compared to the buzzer tone itself. Sometimes the carrier is completely invisible and you only hear the buzzer tone. Noticeably this time, the buzzer tone was very clean, as if it was an original broadcast, not a parasitic or harmonic. And the carrier was full and steady, like it was an original transmission. So it caught us by surprise. There was severe fading at the time, and a lot of us seemed to believe that the buzzer was switching on and off on this frequency, but it was confirmed by others on the IRC chat that they were hearing it when it seemed to be off in other places. So we can be sure it was fading, it was having that effect. But the sheer power that was coming through on those harmonics, parasitics, whatever they are, really was surprising. I think it caught all of us off guard, didn't it?
Yeah, getting the parasitic from the buzzer at the S9 plus 40 is not... Usually, you know, it's rare enough you get the buzzer at that, let alone one of its parasitics. And indeed, for it to seem to just turn off. I guess, you know, parasitics are a lot more affected by propagation, and all the crazy solar activity lately might be something to do with, the reception we've been getting on it. But ultimately, yeah, it's been crazy to see how much power the parasitics seem to have.
All right, let's talk about the solar storm next, because we haven't put that in the script, and that has been interesting. Before we do, presented in 4D has joined us. Hey, 4D.
Welcome, 4D.
Welcome.
Hello.
Doesn't seem he's actually here now.
Well, we said hello.
Yeah, I'll ping him on the IRC.
All right, good. He can shout us when he joins. Okay, so before we move on, Troyan, Danix, have you got any particular... Ah!
It's pushed to talk, it's not working. You'll need to set it all up, man.
Troyan, Danix, have you got any comments on the buzzer and its activity over the last few months?
No.
I have some news from the PMS buzzer researcher, Jan Michalski. So he started to think. He thinks that lots of call signs last time when eating messages were in one day. He started to think that there were two buzzer transmitters, as we think for a long time. He noticed four emission modes on the buzzer. The first mode is plain carrier without USB and LSB. The second mode is plain USB. The third mode is the usual suppressed LSB and USB and carrier. He also noticed that once there were no buzzer at all, no carrier, no also the buzzer itself. So he thinks that some of the small modes are just switching their transmitter, and plain carrier and just nothing, no carrier and no buzzer itself, problems on the buzzer generator. And also he thinks that we must find some people to to make some new bearings of the possible buzzer location. For example, some bearings show that buzzer now is much closer to St. Petersburg. So just we need new bearings to confirm two transmitters theory.
Well, it's something that we've suggested a long time ago, and we looked at the triangulation results we've had from several sources, including the set off our own site and the set off Lade's site, the UVB76 repeater. And each set of those bearings have suggested that there's been two different locations, because there's been quite dramatic differences considering very local and close bearings, which has really, you know, confirmed our theories with the other evidence we've seen of, you know, two different carriers, one being slightly off tune and then reaching the same frequency after a moment or two when a new transmitter's been switched on. So it sounds like Jan's suggesting that he's seen several different transmission modes, which suggest to him that there's actually several different transmitters set in those modes, all relaying the buzzer, and they've been switched on and off at certain times. And he's caught them and confirmed them by using that method rather than the kind of evidence that we've seen.
And we also have seen more proof of the two transmitters lately. It seems both transmit the buzzer. It's on the especially active days where you've got good reception, and I believe the day where we got the 18 messages just the other day, there's points where one buzzes off and the other one stays on. One's obviously closer to any given receiver than the other one. Mathematically, that's obvious. So the reception on one particular buzzer is always going to be stronger than on the other one. When the stronger one turns off first, you can hear the lighter one underneath in the background, you know, until that gets turned off. And sometimes one will cut out halfway through a buzz and then it'll stay off and the other one will stay on and things, then there's an outage. And that happened quite a lot just the other day, and we do see that quite commonly. So we can safely say indeed that it's there's at least two transmitters for it, I think.
Yeah, if
also,
not more.
Regarding the US...
Go ahead, Danix.
Also regarding the USB and LSB, in October 2010 there was a transmission sent in pure USB, but it was in same strength as the buzzer itself, which was in USB plus carrier.
Ah, I see, yeah. Interesting.
Sorry, we do have a little more on the buzzer there in the script on the CW and things. On certain days, we get a huge spate of activity throughout multiple stations, more of which we're going to talk about, I believe, next. The Pip and the Wheel and some CW stations as well, some one of which that calls for MDVB, which in Morse would be MDJB. And they give flash messages in Morse code as well in the same sort of format as a buzzer message. There was a couple for OEUN, that station with the weird format that happened on the big message day the other day. And we see flash messages all over the spectrum, different call signs in these particular formats. But we see that they're connected in with the pip and the buzzer and the wheel and things with their particular call signs. But we'll get more into that as we start talking more about the pip and the wheel and things as well. And the rebroadcast too.
But yeah, so a quiet but auspicious start to the year for the buzzer, I feel.
Yeah, it started up quiet, but lately activity's really peaked.
Okay, 4D, are you with us now?
Hello.
Hey, good to hear you, man.
Good evening.
Welcome to the show. Okay, anything else to comment on the buzzer before we move on, guys?
The only other things are going to get covered as we speak about other stuff later in the podcast, so let's move it on, man.
Okay.
Buzzer reception in the United States has been minimal to none.
Interesting, because it's been extreme in Europe, very strong.
Yeah, it has been very strong in Europe, actually.
I haven't seen it in a few months.
Again, that must be the solar storm. I think that's what we want to talk about now, Web.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so, man. It's been an interesting couple of weeks. We've had a couple of coronal mass injections, I think, in the last 2 weeks, and one of them has been absolutely huge to the point where media organisations all over the world, in an attempt to sell newspapers and page views and so on in order to earn themselves money, decided that we all needed to panic and start panic buying food because the entire electricity network is going to be destroyed. And
that was not in the United States. Wow.
Well, in Europe, that was the reaction we got. Well, very much in the UK news media anyway. I'm not sure about the rest of Europe. But
stupid Americans.
Yeah, now we're getting a hose pipe ban because there's a drought, apparently. Fuck off. It's been raining and snowing.
Yeah, the dikes and ditches around here are about as full as they can get. They're almost at flooded levels, and we're being told we've got a hose pipe ban. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but it's about long-term seasonal trend, isn't it? There's more to it, reservoirs and all that bollocks.
Well, it's just about being a prick.
Either way, solar storms. The media went nuts, so I guess any of you that are listening, and most of you probably being into radio anyway, were well aware of the coronal mass ejection that occurred. But for the uninformed, for those who have no idea what I'm talking about, very briefly, the sun doesn't just sit up there and burn away and shine bright all the time. It's incredibly active. It's a giant fusion engine, so yeah, it puts out a hell of a lot of energy. And sometimes this occurs in mass explosions of gas plasma and ionized particles that explode from the surface and travel out into the solar system. Now, of course, you know, the Earth is quite small, so we miss a lot of these. They get released from the sun and we can see them on the solar observatory satellites and so on, but they never actually hit Earth and they're not bother. When they do hit Earth, they have the fascinating effect of causing the aurora borealis, which for anyone living up north, including quite a few of our friends in the Freon team, they get to see some wonderful auroras, which I've never seen and I'm really quite jealous of. But for a radio listener, it has a very different effect because, of course, radio is reflecting, or shortwave is reflecting signals off the ionosphere, and the ionosphere is directly affected by the coronal mass ejections. This changes the propagation of radio signals, and it's been absolutely fascinating, some of the stuff we've seen. One of the sites I would recommend any listener goes and checks out is spaceweather.com. There's a couple of guys using their SDRs to look for sunspots, and during the coronal mass ejection in a 21 megahertz frequency, when it hit the Earth, the amount of static caused some great, beautiful effects on SDR waterfalls if you happen to be tuned at the time. There's some videos of them on spaceweather.com, so go check them out. But for our effects, what we've noticed is the propagation of the buzzer significantly has almost twisted and become the opposite of what it normally is. At this time of year on late stream from the UVB76 repeater, we expect to hear it quite strong in the morning and to disappear off by about midday and be quite inaudible in the afternoon and perhaps come back about 4 or 5pm due to it being winter conditions and propagation being best to suit those times. In the summer, we hear it less. Now, what's been interesting is last couple of days when the storm's finished, we've had exactly that pattern. Strong in the morning, so when I start listening about 8am, it's very strong and very clear and slowly begins to fade towards the afternoon. But during the time of the coronal mass ejection, when the storm was hitting the Earth, it was the exact opposite. Completely inaudible in the morning, very audible in the afternoon. So this affects all of the bands through the shortwave spectrum from 0 to 30 megahertz. And for any of you listening to radio at the time, you would have noticed substantial changes to the ability to hear local stations, but also being surprised at the same time to be able to hear distant stations that you'd never heard before at times that you would not expect to. So coronal mass injections are a lot of fun. They certainly bring some dynamics into the radio world. During December last year, I seem to remember that a lot of us were surprised to be hearing FM transmissions in the 30 megahertz band at just below the 30 megahertz in 28 and 29. From Russian taxi firms. We spent quite a bit of time laughing and listening to Russian taxi drivers talking to the girls who operate the main base and send them all out on their taxi journeys. And so keep an eye on space weather. When a coronal mass ejection hits, it can cause all kinds of weird radio effects, and it's well worth tuning in just to see what you could catch from the other side of the world that you might never have been able to hear before and probably won't have a chance to again. What are your experiences, guys? How did you find stations on during the solar storm?
Well, I'm a big fan of the sort of lower bands of HF, so pretty much all the stuff that I like just suffered. but the higher HF GCS frequencies and things like that, and some Russian air frequencies, have been really good. And that's been pretty sweet because it's always a nice little listen, really. But most of the stuff that I research anyway has been quite heavily affected by it from obviously not having very good reception when it should do.
Yeah, it's just generally ruining your radio experience.
Yep, which is pretty annoying because of work and all this now, you know, the shifts I do all the time now, by the time I ever get home and things like this, there's no real time for any research and it just doesn't happen much anymore. So yeah, pretty annoying.
You need a nice programming job where you can piss about an IRC all day long and listen to radios.
Well, I just need to be poached by the S30 unit. I would happily be an operator at the S30 unit.
Okay, anyone else want to comment on the solar storm? Danix, did you pick up any interesting stations during the coronal mass ejection?
No. All I've been doing was looking for IDF2 and IDF3 in the higher bands above 10 megahertz.
Okay, we'll get on and talk about those in a second. Says next in the script, E25. Grasp, you probably know most about that. Do you want to talk about that or shall someone else?
Well, it's a weird one, E25, and it's always being quite the comedy station for a lot of us. I know it's one of Lina's favourite stations. I know Avera's a big fan of E25. I personally think it's a great station.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to watch out for, you know. It might broadcast and it might not, but you always know the frequency, the carrier's there, but sometimes it doesn't broadcast even when the carrier's up. And it's a good bit of fun, that one. It's not quite as strict as the other stations. The main weird thing about it is how long it's been on the air. I believe it came up in 2005, and it's now 7 years on. It's 2012 now, and it's so badly operated. It's odd to see something of such obvious importance as a station to be up for 7 years. It broadcasts not necessarily with a lot of power, but with quite a bit, and it broadcasts often. So it's not a cheap operation, especially over the span of, say, 7 years. And it's not a fickle operation. It's got something to do with it. Since 2000, it turns out. So 12 years. And that's even worse than 12 years, nearly twice as long. It's odd to see it so badly run. There's always, cut off transmissions. There's always mistakes. There's always noises. There's always shut down sounds from their Windows XP system that they're using. You know, there's the spider solitaire sounds that have become somewhat famous. It's just a very odd station, and yeah, it needs properly triangulating. We seem to know from sources that it's in Egypt, but yeah, it's one to really look at. And for me, it seems very connected to the old magnetics field station, as it's called in the Cornet project, as it gets said. I can't remember what the actual designator of that station was. I think, yeah, it's E09 anyway. That station, it seems to be a relative of that. And I think that needs looking into, you know. But that's all I really wanted to mention on E25, that it's, I don't know, it's a very, very odd station. There's always odd sounds going on. There's a particular recording which I regretfully can't find at the moment. Can't source it either. Where there's loads of weird noise going on, not just shutdown sounds, but loads of, I don't know if it was even maybe as a pirate on the frequency, just making crazy sounds, but weird digital sort of sounds, but I don't know, hard to explain really. That station does nothing but pose question, mystery, and again, it's a barrel of laughs as well, as far as number stations go anyway.
Yeah, it's one of those that if you just heard it off the cuff and you'd never heard of it before, you'd instantly assume it was a pirate station because it's just so unprofessional that there's no way it could be a serious broadcast. But yeah, 12 years of it suggests otherwise. If it's a pirate broadcasting, you know, at any time during an 8-hour period every day of the week for the last 12 years, it's one dedicated pirate.
That's it. And for them to be free at pretty much the same times every day all the time, I don't know, it's clearly some sort of agency, it's clearly an important thing, but the fact it's run so, you know, so shoddily, it goes to show whatever group is running it, the regulations with them, if we would, are quite lax, if anything.
It just defies any rational explanation, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally weird.
Okay, M18 next. I've completely missed this one, so you guys are going to have to tell me. I know nothing about M18.
Man, it was on, I think it stopped broadcasting now, but since late last year, I think December, M18, which is a station of unknown origin, don't know what it's for either. It's a station that just constantly broadcasts time in Morse. Danix lets me know it's broadcasting since the 80s and 90s. It gives many different time zones, really. I'll let Danix speak more about this because it's more sort of Danix territory, the more stations and things, but it was online for a very long time, a couple of months constantly. So, Danix, do you want to take it away about M18?
It has been on within the 80 metres, the handband range, and has been varying with the time zone used from UTC plus 4 and UTC plus 14 even, so they are really crazy. And from the direction findings done by the UDXF, the excellent utility group made by Ari Bunda, which is the author of the Numbers and Oddities newsletters, it is located in the northern Russia.
Okay, so has that one gone off air now, Danix?
Grasp has gone for a while.
Yeah. I take it M18's stopped now. It's gone offline, yeah?
Yes, or maybe it changed frequency. Well, there were no logs lately of it.
Okay. What's the station that constantly broadcasts time, but the year and date as well, and it's set to like 1982 or
1984. 1052, is it? The French military?
Is that the one?
Well, that station is 51, the French military training station.
Ah, that's the one.
Yes, M51. And also FAV22.
Okay, so there we go. M18 has not been logged recently, but do keep an ear out for it. If you find it, let us know. Okay, next in the script we've got IDF2 and IDF3, Danix, which is yours, so take it away.
They are two FSK data modes used by Russian intelligence. The IDF2 is using 200 baud rate and 1000 Hz shift, where the IDF3 is using the 200 baud rate, same as IDF2, but 500 Hz shift. The first one is online encryption, so can be decoded. The bit autocorrelation equals 288, and the second one is bounded, and messages for the second one are very, very, very unusual. Mostly I hear are no messages and no IDs except 576 seems to be on the air. Our schedule send it. It's not as often heard as IDF2, which is very more frequent and sends much more messages. I haven't heard any news lately. It's all just messages. They are both sent in schedules, where the first transmission is either starting on a full hour or half past, and it has two repeats with 10 minutes spacing. That is why I think they are the Family 1B counterparts, but I wonder why they are using MFSKs, voice stations, Morse station, M12, and those FSKs. I think they are two different organizations using IDF2 and IDF3. IDF3 format is the ID group count and eventual message of multi-figure groups. It can be like 11 figure group, 9, 4, 7, 5, and such. Mostly what I hear on IDF3 is 5, 7, 6, the ID, 1, the group count, and 5 zeros, the no message, and 10 pluses, which Russian uses to mark the end of message. IDF2, nothing more to say about it as we can't decode it, but it seems to send a clear text messages as it's online encrypted and IDF3 is already encrypted message. Well, that is more useful to send online encrypted messages. So, not much with decoding on the second side. Well, there are some recordings to be placed here.
Okay, I'll splice those in. Don't worry about that. Right, so from what you're saying, IDF2 is the... it's encrypted in the format that it's sent. So it's actually sent in clear text, but because no one actually knows how to decode the modulated data, no one could decode the message. So they haven't bothered encrypting it, right?
Yes.
And IDF3 is encrypted in the standard one-time pad format, so when it is sending messages, it's sending number messages.
Yes, they are number groups.
Okay, perfect. I've only managed to hear IDF3 myself. They seem to be on at times when I'm never around, unfortunately. Okay.
It has four schedules. The two on Wednesday, where the one uses extremely high frequencies. The first transmission of that one was within the 20 megahertz range, which is very, very high and almost impossible to receive as I am very close to Russia. And I think they have recipients somebody farther away. The only schedule that uses normal frequencies is the Thursday evening transmission of IDF3.
Yeah, that's one of the things to really note about it, is the frequencies seem inappropriate for the times. That it's using frequencies in like 10 megahertz plus at night time, isn't it?
This isn't the first station to do that, though.
Well, it depends on where the intended recipient. Or 18
megahertz at 13 UTC.
Okay, so when did these stations first appear, Danix? Because these ones are pretty new to me, and I'm pretty sure they'll be pretty new to our listeners as well.
No idea about IDF3, but IDF2 has been there since 2006.
Very interesting. Okay, should we move on to the next bit in the script, the broken tar?
Yeah,
TAH. The TAH. What is a TAH, 4D? Tell us.
TAH is a... How to describe it? It's a SITOR, a station, that's located in Turkey. Its purpose is essentially just to relay information to sailors. It's sail mail, it's called. Basically, the sailors send something to it on one frequency, and they'll save it and then send it out on another. It does SITOR B stuff for weather. It's a channel marker, so it's good for propagation. And it basically, it's just one of those stations that's there just because they have it there. Turkey sucks with its transmitters, and TAH has always had problems on the 8 megahertz frequencies and the 4 megahertz frequencies. I remember when I first started doing my radio stuff, and I had never heard the buzzer before. I was hearing it on 4 megahertz. I was like, oh, this is so strange. It sounds like the buzzer. It must be another buzzer. But then I didn't know Morse code at this time. So
I think that's a mistake that many people have made, especially when it was very active on the 4 megahertz, because I'm not sure whether it's the same transmitter or not, but it seems to have disappeared from 4 megahertz and be sitting in the 8 megahertz when it's on right now, and has been for the last year or so. But yeah, I think a lot of us caught it in the 4 megahertz area. It sounds just like the buzzer because it's so broken, and it's like, it's a buzzer, but it's being really weird. Guys, listen to this. And everyone's like, no, it's a broken TAH.
It's not the same transmitter. It's impossible to use the same transmitter on two frequencies.
Once I hear the two desynchronized TAH transmissions 500 hertz apart.
I think I've got a screenshot of in 8 megahertz where it's so broken it's putting out harmonics across the whole of the 200 kilohertz that the SDR IQ can hear, and it completely distorted stations all around it, which is the strongest I've ever seen it.
Harmonics would be the proper word. It'd be just spurious transmissions.
But yeah, the broken tar. Damn it. How long can these things go on without them knowing they're broken?
They're well aware of it. People have sent so many reports of them, they just don't care.
It's just ridiculous. Why would you even leave it transmitting and wasting the electricity and wasting the money?
It's Turkey.
But unbelievable. It just goes to show, no one's got any respect anywhere, whether it's on radio, in real life, no respect. Okay, let's move on. What else do we have in our script? Oh yeah, SO6S has moved on to its summer schedules.
No, it's a spring schedule, which is also used in autumn.
Before we get into the SO6 stuff, what's the stuff, I think this is quotes from something, on the script regarding picking up a fault in an A35 unit, all this stuff?
It's from 2001. I was going to splice it in around the broken TAH because it's rather appropriate to the fact, because it's a radio transmitter that's broken on the spaceship. It's HAL 9000 speaking. It's before he kills all the crew. So, you know, it's got a nice ironic twist to go with the fact that there's, you know, Turkey puts out these broken TARs. So I thought it was, you know, sci-fi geeks would get it.
Right, on to SO6S.
Right, SO6S. Yeah, SO6S has moved on to its spring-autumn schedule, so we need to update the calendar. We have got the frequencies noted down, but I mean, it caught a few of us off guard. There's so many stations going on that, and we've been listening to SO6S quite religiously over the last 6 months on its set frequencies during the winter. So it caught us by surprise when it suddenly changed, wasn't its old frequencies anymore, and kept being heard on new ones. And we'd forgotten that it moved over to its spring schedule. So a few shouts of, well, look, SO6S is here. It's got a new schedule. And, no, it doesn't. It's just the spring one. And we're all idiots.
SO6S made a mistake on March the 14th and sent it started with a wrong message with ID 745 instead of new message 4352. Or what ID was this? It had to send ID 328.
Okay, SO6S has also been heard on 6930 kilohertz, which is a bit of a surprise because Scan Sweden called it there by mistake because he's been recording 6930 for us because of the station S6930, which is still active at the moment but has not been particularly active at all this year. There's been a few test counts, a few messages, nothing special, nothing really interesting to report, except for the fact he accidentally caught SO6S there, which anyway, obviously was a surprise to find in your recording selection when you're looking for S6930. Anyway, SO6S is onto its spring schedule, so we'll update the calendar in the next couple of days with the new frequencies and you'll be able to find it.
6930 kHz is in use by SO6S already for years.
There we go, SO6S had it first. Okay,
yes.
Here in the script it says 8th of February 2012, M12 stopped XBA 2 messages twice in South African Navy PSK FSK hybrid. Yeah, this is a Danix thing, isn't it? Yeah, I missed this one as well. Danix, tell us about this.
As I was, as usual, looking for stations, specifically I was looking for IDF2 as usual, but soon after I started the hand on 10,250 kHz, I found a M12 transmission calling 9751, the one message for 975. I thought it might be a very long message as I heard it back in summer, sending a 1,274 group message. Very, very long. Well, then it started with only 60 groups, approximately. But it was interrupted in the middle of that broadcast by a sudden XBA2, which scared me a bit, like other two people which were in my house at that time. And it sent two messages in one broadcast, which is very rare for this station, this station. And it repeated it a few minutes later. And meanwhile, between XBA2 and M12, which came back to send its message again, this time completely, there was a South African Navy PSK FSK hybrid, which was very, very strong, as every time I hear South African Navy, they must be good. And then M12 sent its message again, sending it two times with a small pause, between repeats. Interestingly, the transmissions were not the same message as I thought originally.
Wow, very active afternoon you had then.
And meanwhile, you called some number stations ending its transmissions, but you only saw it on waterfall. No hearing or recording.
Yeah, that's the benefit of IQ files when you've got the ability to record them, isn't it? Okay, next up, 4XZ. Now, this is a station I've seen people talking about when I've been busy and not been able to read the conversation and catch on what's going on. So I don't know anything about this one at all either. What is 4XZ, guys? Tell me.
4X.
Yeah, go ahead.
That is an Israeli Navy Morse code station. It is on a few frequencies going in a parallel. And it's most likely for the area, the Middle East. So nothing much for us to hear. But recently it started to use a new frequencies, which were a lot stronger in the Europe. And there were, for example, the Idler, the VVV, and then it turned off its main frequencies and it went.
Is anyone else hearing Danix, or is
yeah,
it me?
It's like that.
You lagged out really badly, Danix. No.
Sounds like not many people are interested in the station.
No, you lagged out really badly. No.
Yeah, you'll have to say that whole section again, Danix. I couldn't hear a word you said. You lagged out.
So remove that fragment in the post-production, of course.
Yeah, remove that section and just go through it again.
It is an Israeli Navy Morse code station, which is going in parallel in all four frequencies. It is for the Middle East, most likely. And despite E10 has went off the air, it is still going. No idea, but it's military, so they can do whatever they want. It started using three new frequencies, which were much stronger. Nice. I was echoed. Which are much, much stronger in the Europe. And that is most likely because of the activity in that area in the Middle East. And there were some oddities like the Idler, VVVDE4X, all the time, which can be heard on its frequencies. And then, a few minutes later, it sent a message, but it turned off its main frequencies, continuing only on its new frequencies, so it could be in a different area to receive.
Yeah, interesting. Considering the activity in the Middle East at the moment, and the Arab Spring having happened, I'm not surprised that Israel has taken a different stance on its military.
Worth noting, the new frequencies that we've seen are 2860, a normal one of which is 2680, so 2860, 4539, and 6607 kilohertz center frequencies for CW. But that's about all there is to say on 4XZ itself. It's an Israeli Navy station, but it's been sighted a lot more recently in Europe, quite a lot of activity. So people have made sightings of it, and that's what that is.
Yeah, it's turned up on everyone's radar now that it's audible. When we couldn't hear it, we didn't know it was there.
Yeah, like with pretty much everything, you know, there's so much going on every day, all the time with radio, and none of us know about it because we simply don't pick it up.
I would like to make a correction from earlier. Apparently it, TAH does not have to do anything with sail mail. I was incorrect there. Scan Sweden had corrected me there.
Ah, okay, interesting. Thank you. It's a hobby project for non-commercial users, he says here. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, it sounds the same as WL, so.
Okay. Either way, broken tiles suck, no matter whose fault it is. And if it's Turkish Navy, even worse. Military shouldn't be run that poor. But, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Same thing as XM today. That's all military, so.
Okay, let's move on. Next on the script, Tucana's pit research and dossier. I mean, Tucana really deserves a mention for this, doesn't he?
Yeah, like no other. I've never seen a man do so much work in such short time. His dedication was second to none, and brilliant research. Absolutely brilliant. I actually worked with him on a lot of the research, and we spent a lot of time in the Mumbo and things like that, and on IRC. It was so much fun. The couple of months spent on it was just it really, really was great. And there's so much has come from it. The dossier itself is an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah, I've had a good read of it a couple of weeks back. I have to admit, I've been so busy over the last 4 months, I've quite neglected Preom and the whole number station scene. So even though I've read through the dossier and I'm aware of the work and know what's in there, it's slipped my mind. I've not sat and had a chance to really digest it and take it in, so it'd be nice if you could take us through some of the highlights, please, Grasp.
Yeah, well, I'd be happy to go through it. I mean, as I say, I worked on it with him myself, helped him out with some certain things, a lot of the transcription work I did as well, and a couple of the theories I helped coin turned out to be the actual case. At least for a while, anyway, it was interesting. But the PIP dossier, what Tucan has essentially done is written a fully comprehensive write-up on the PIP station itself. Someone who's never even listened to a radio before could pick this up, read it cover to cover, and they would understand the PIP. You know, everything it does, its broadcasting formats. Of course, its exact purpose can't really be given, but there's there's speculation on that. But he starts out by defining the PIP anyway. He explains what it is, the fact that it's got a channel mark going, it gives it frequencies, explains who operates it, explains a bit about the background, what's known about it. Then he goes into history, and there's two types of message formats with the PIP that we witness. There's the one that we've nicknamed Lea, because it's a message for people, and it starts with that word, and then it goes on to give 10 call signs and then asks how they're receiving. This is all stuff that we know because we've covered the PIP in previous podcasts. But the depth that Tucan has gone into in the call sign pools and everything is it's unbelievable. Every call sign, there's 82 call signs that were in activity through the 2 months it was being covered by Tucana, who, by the way, had a desktop radio absolutely dedicated to the night frequency of the PIP when it was broadcasting. And this was every single day for 2 months, and it even let it disturb his sleep pattern enough to set alarms to get out of bed, to change the radio and set the record and things like that. Such commitment, it's unbelievable. And he's got all of the 82 call signs listed here, the pools that they were given in. It turns out that the call signs are given in particular pools, which tend to be 5 call signs that will be given in a group, and then another 5 call signs that will be given in a group, and then they're grouped into a block of 10, and it's asked that way. Then the next set in a rota will be asked the same thing. And interesting things happen with the call signs, the orders that they go in. And Tucana goes into so much detail and explains it so well. I'm not going to obviously read it all out right now because it is really comprehensive. It's really good work. So I'll let everyone read that for themselves. He then goes in and explains the other format message that they give, which is identical to the format that Buzzer gives. And he gives the call signs that we've witnessed in that format, which is only actually one. He mentions how the PIP and the squeaky wheel seem to have a connection, S30 and S32. We go into detail about something. I believe it was Aver who first noticed this. When the PIP would give a message in the format that the buzzer would give a message in, 4 minutes later, on average, the squeaky wheel S32 would give a message in the same format. So it seemed to be relaying. We've witnessed this many, many times, and it's certainly the case these stations are connected. And oftentimes when you hear a message from the squeaky wheel, you can hear the channel marker for the pip going off in the background. Clearly then, whoever's broadcasting from the squeaky wheel is listening to the pip, receiving the pip. So interesting to note that. He goes on to mention other activity that's been on pip frequencies, particularly flash messages in Morse code for RJC66, a call sign that's attributed to the CIS Navy headquarters. So some interesting stuff there. There's lots of logs for that same station, loads of logs for the actual messages themselves, the Gliar messages, the buzzer style messages. He shows bearings from coordination coordinates and triangulations. He's even got International Telecommunications Union info in there, map of the general area where it seems to be located, which is proposed to be in Rostov-on-Don, in southern Russia. He then goes on to speak more about the location of it, and ultimately it's a huge write-up. It's 27 pages long in a PDF, that's including the 7 or so pages of logs at the bottom of the different messages, Gliar and buzzer style, and it's by far the best write-up on any one station I've ever seen. And as I say, the dedication that's gone into it, he deserves the highest commendation for it. It is really good work. So everyone should get onto the blog on preom.org and look into Takana's PIP dossier. It's a brilliant document. And if you want to know more about the PIP, there's nothing more to know than what's in there, really.
Yeah, it's a stunning piece of work. Absolutely stunning. I remember I've only had the chance to sit down and read through it once, being a busy guy that I am. But the time I did sit down and read through it, it was jaw-droppingly detailed and analytical. It's a fantastic piece of research into a modern Russian military station, and anyone who's got interest in that area should definitely go check it out. It is a wealth of knowledge.
It really is, and it gives you an insight again into even more stuff to do with the CW flash messages that we see, more insight into the buzzer and the squeaky wheel. The connection again is a really interesting thing, and a good bit of research has gone into that, and it's definitely the case that the wheel receives from the pip and indeed broadcasts messages accordingly. Not only in that case, interesting enough, that the wheel does broadcast messages having not received anything from the pip, so it's not just a relay station by any means. But that again, it's all explained well in the document itself, and it's a really good piece of work.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably cover what's in there in 2 podcasts if we were to go into the detail that he's got in there.
Yeah, it really, really is a big write-up. Brilliant.
Okay, let's move on a bit. Next in the script, it says 5426/6930 activity, 5292 repeats buzzer messages, distortion has disappeared. Again, this one's bypassed me. I've been far too busy recently. Who knows about this one?
This is stuff that I know about. Let me have a quick check on here. Yeah. So 5292, it was noted the other day that a message that was given on the buzzer was repeated by a station broadcasting on the frequency 5292 kilohertz. I'm not too sure what call sign's given on there. I know we have got the call sign for that now, or as far as I remember, we do have the call sign. But also we see 4XZ on that frequency, so interesting to note, you shouldn't mistake that for a flash message for a Russian unit, you know. But yep, 5292 was repeated a buzzer message. The only thing that was different was the leading numbers, the header, and then the word was the same. I believe the commanding numbers at the end were the same as well. But that can all be checked out. I believe we have that logged. If not, then we'll get to work doing that. If we have the recording, which I'm quite sure we will, at least of the buzzer message, we will splice that in here.
Yep.
And then also to say, besides 5292, which we'll have just heard there, there's been more activity on the frequency 5426, which is a frequency that I first stumbled across giving messages in the buzzer frequency. It gives the call sign Arbat 50, which is interesting. Arbat is the call sign attributed to the Moscow military headquarter there. So it seems to be indeed a military thing. And it gives messages again in the buzzer format. And it seems to only give them for one station. I think it only gives them for Nara 55, but it might have given them for another call sign now. I'm not 100% sure on that. But again, we have got recordings, so we'll splice them in for 5426 here. And then, as we mentioned earlier, 6930 has been active again. There has been a new call sign. It was Triagonic 42, something like that. I can't remember what it was now. We'll splice that in here as well. And then there's also one more find along those same sort of lines on the frequency 5330 kilohertz upper sideband. A station that we hear from the squeaky wheel in the Dliar message format from the squeaky wheel, as just with the pip, it has that format and the buzzer format messages. One of the stations it asks for a reception report from is Bison 64, Bison 64. We've found some traffic on the frequency 5330 kilohertz upper sideband. Avaya found some traffic for that station, Bison 64. There was two different formats given. One was a grouping of numbers, or a couple of different groupings of numbers, and then one was a very odd format. I'm not too sure on it, but we will log that because we definitely have recordings again, which we will splice in. Oh wait, no, we don't have 5330 recordings, which is a shame actually, but we will upload the transcription on the site. I know they're in my IRC history, if nowhere else, if Avaya hasn't saved them, so I'll track those down. We'll get those on the site as well. But aside that, those flash messages seem connected in with these stations as well. We've probably got recordings of some CW flash messages. Hopefully we can paste some of those here as well for a couple of the different stations. I'm sure there's at least one or two that I've got. And that pretty much covers it for those stations. So a lot of CIS, sort of naval and military activity with these same sort of formatted radio messages between the units. So more interesting stuff to see. Very active lately, and we will continue to monitor them.
Yeah, it's definitely a set we've got to pay much more attention to, isn't it? It seems that we're well aware of a whole set of frequencies in this area, from roughly the bottom of 4 megahertz to the top of to the bottom of about 7, where we hear all kinds of different stations, both voice and continuous wave, sending buzzer-style messages. And it's a shame we haven't got enough coverage more locally in Russia to be able to pick some of these up, because I reckon there's probably a lot more going on, and we could build up a better picture of the network and how the buzzer and the pip and the wheel all relate to this if we were able to cover a lot more of it. It just doesn't penetrate enough into Europe.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting stuff to see, and it's definitely going to get monitored more. For instance, when I get time and I can connect to an SDR with a good enough range, I'll monitor a certain area of a band where I can monitor 5292, 5330 and 5426 all within the same waterfall. So should one of them broadcast, I can catch that. I did actually capture a recording on 5330 of some traffic, but it wasn't voice traffic. It was a CIS data mode modem. Token told me what he thought it was, and that's likely what it was because he does know his modes. But I can't remember exactly what mode it was right now, so sorry, Token. But yes, no less has been traffic there at least, so we have caught that. No need to splice it in here, though. It's nothing spectacular to listen to. It's just interesting to note the CIS activity again on there, which seems to relate to the wheel, which is, again, the frequencies aren't that different for the wheel of frequency for the days 5473. You can monitor that in the same section as when you're monitoring those other three stations that I am monitoring now, 5426 and 5292 and 5330. And the night frequency is a different story, but that's a low frequency. But yeah, that pretty much covers it for those stations. But all the recordings that we've spliced in there, any that we've missed out, we will splice in here. And we'll continue to monitor them. So expect to hear more about those stations in the future podcasts that will be coming up, hopefully, by the way. We'll be doing the podcasts at least monthly again from now on. It's the new season, and we're all settled into our new jobs and things. A lot of us have had big changes, like new jobs and things like that, school changes, uni changes, all sorts of things. But we're back in force now. The loggings are happening again. The database is coming right up to scratch now, and we're at a good point now. So expect the activity to come back, I say.
Yeah, most definitely.
Now, next in the script, we have my XM find, and annoying story about this. I'm not sure what XM find it's on about, because recently my old computer actually broke. The hard drive went on, it's completely done, kaput. So no data recovery, nothing like that. So I've lost a hell of a lot of logs, a lot of recordings, and I mean a lot of recordings and logs. So I believe it was an XM find, and Webby backed me up on this earlier by saying, before I said which one I thought it was, he thinks it's the one I found in December. XM is the backwards music station, also known as Other Wales. It's been on quite a bit since the last podcast, but not so recently as in the last couple of days.
No, it has been on. It was on today.
Oh, was it? Oh,
yes. Yeah, Sez called it either today or yesterday. I can't remember exactly, but Sez called hearing it. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Carry on.
Excellent. Oh, well, that's the first contact we've had, or at least noted for a little while then, that I'm aware of. But yeah, it's been quiet for a bit. But it was on a few different instances since the last podcast up until the new year, really. And in December, there was one. It's been noted in the latter half of last year of having long sorts of long transmissions. It goes on for a couple hours, sometimes a couple of days, a couple of weeks. We had another one in December where it was going on for a couple of weeks as well. I think that's what we were talking about, because I had a series of recordings of different nights in different locations on different SDRs and things, as well as on my own radio. I don't have any recordings of that right now, because I didn't put any onto our uploading database, so no recordings. I haven't got any of that on my new computer, which is a shame, but you all know what XM sounds like anyway, so you can all appreciate what it is.
I think the real point is we've reached a general conclusion about XM and what it is, or the two stars that we've heard. We've more or less decided that, yes, there is a situation, and 4D's actually put a video up on YouTube of him trying to simulate XM Wales, and you should check that out. But we've generally reached the conclusion that there's two forms of XM. There's the form where it is feedback between a transmitter and a receiver, and the noise you hear with the rising tones or the lowering tones is just that effect happening. And there's the other format where you've heard distorted voice that sounds like it's encoded, and there's, you know, a reasonable chance that there may be some sort of voice encryption. But of course, it could just be crappy feedback as well. Who knows? But I mean, that's the conclusion to take from XM, is most of the time it's feedback. Now, one of the things I've really noted is something that Sez mentioned today when I commented on the fact that it always seems to be in 6 megahertz band. And he says that's, of course, a very popular pirate band. So you're more likely to have guys who are being negligent with their transmitters. And that could be the cause of the majority of the XM transmissions we hear.
Yeah, there's that. But then there's the frequent catches of outside of such frequencies. For example, 8707 was where it appeared quite a lot. In the latter part of last year. I believe that was the December frequency, in fact. But it has cropped up in the 6 megahertz band as well.
The 8.7 megahertz frequency was a very, very common frequency for the past 10 years.
Ah, well, there we go. 10 years, even better.
Yeah, so there we go. It seems we could more or less be sure 90% of the XM you hear is just a couple of badly set up transmitter receiver combinations due to negligent operators, which is a damn shame, because it really looked cool and fascinating. Backwards music station, you know, sounds spooky, and it just turns out to be a mistake.
It's been triangulated to southern Italy in a United States naval station many times over, actually.
So yeah, just again, once again, negligent operators from that conclusion. Regular negligent operators. Damn it. Never attribute to malice what can be attributed to incompetency. It just goes to show. Okay, next up. Emergency action messages. Who was it who found the new call sign? I'm pretty sure that was you, Grasp, wasn't it?
It wasn't actually me. I brought it up to the majority of you guys. It was me who first mentioned it to yourself. It was Takana who informed me that this message was ongoing. He'd been actually monitoring HFGCS, not strictly, but listening to it quite a bit for a couple of days, just, you know, getting a feel for it again, having recently relieved himself of that 2 month of PIP duty where he pretty much didn't get to use his radio for the sake of pre-home. So again, many thanks to him for that. But he was listening to EAMs and things anyway. They were very active, and he was catching lots of Sky Kings as well, which are always fun. He caught a particular one from Andrews, and it happened a couple of times on the same frequency over the course of a couple hours or so. And I believe there was another one for that same thing the next day. It was Andrews giving a message. The message was for society. Like, that's not the body of the message, that's who the message was for. I'll play that right now.
For society, for society. India, Tango, Delta.
So as you can see, it just goes into an EAM as normal. But at the start, and at the end, he says, for society, which is something we haven't heard before. Don't know what it means. Don't know if it's just some patriotic little thing because of due to the content of the message, and Americans are quirky like that sometimes. I don't know what that's about, but interesting to know things like that on things with such importance as the HFGCS frequencies, very important systems. So just a quirky little thing to note there. We've noted a lot of Sky Kings lately as well. Heard some stations we don't hear very often, for example, Semi-Pro. So,
awesome.
Yeah, some weird stuff going on with HFGCS. I've also caught, where is it now? This. So you've got someone jamming HFGCS there, probably Iraq. Not Iraq, sorry, probably Iran. Apologies to Iraq, no offence intended. Probably an Iranian jammer test, because the jammer changes a bit, changes speeds before. Somewhat like the Iranian jammer efficacy tests we've seen before.
Take a few points there. To start off, for society, society is either a tactical call sign or just something random, since most call signs used for the HFGCS are random and really have no meaning. And that jammer, it may be a jammer, but it also probably might not be. I've seen many cases when the frequencies have odd noises on them, typically 8992, that I've heard plenty of odd, strange noises over the transmitters, and that's just because the transmitters are just being bad. So that's a little strange.
Yeah, indeed, but to listen to it, you can hear it's a jammer. I mean, I'll splice the full recording in post-production and people can hear that, but it seems certain to me anyway that it would be a jammer. It is incidentally on 8992 though, so I mean, what you say is duly taken into account. It may indeed then not be a jammer, but to me it seems like a jammer on there, and it's very strong. So we'll see if we see that more often, which evidently seems you have.
I've actually got a couple recordings. See if I can just pull one up somewhere.
Just while he's looking at that, also worth noting, the frequency you can see in the same spectrum when you've got 8992 as your centre frequency. Your top frequency. You can see 8710 of the sideband. We've been catching a lot of Russian phones on there, a lot of Russian naval phones. But calls to home, not really tactical things. Sort of an operator who patch calls to sailors who were out with the Navy back to their women and their friends back on shore. It's funny to hear sometimes. It's good little catch.
Right, one sec, guys. Got to go pee.
Well, here's some notes that 4D's got. Yeah, that's very odd noise, some sort of open line or something going on there. It's very, very different to the stuff I got, though.
I guess we're on a break. Did you see the video?
Yeah, I saw the video as well, and if you want to put a quick explanation in now, I'll play that.
Alright.
Do you want to mention that now?
Sure. Go ahead and play it.
Just mention it first. We'll edit okay. This.
The aforementioned video that I had created was put on unlisted just for simplicity's sake, and so anyway, the recording was made with a handheld radio and a bass radio, and I basically just fed the lines of, or at least got the feedback from one into the other. I can actually replicate it right now, assuming I can plug my radio in. One moment.
Do it, man, do it.
I'm with you there, Webby. Well, 4D, he's just sorting his radio out now. I'll play the recording he's done. Strikingly similar. And obviously with different radios and things. In different circumstances, the noise will be different. Different frequencies, I guess, different propagation.
Yeah, that's reasonable, man. That's similar enough so that considering the thousands of combinations you could have, it's a reasonable explanation, yeah.
Yeah, you can see what sort of things are going on. So as we rightly have suspected all along, you know, the majority of these XM catches, it's sort of feedback loops. And there is the one that seems to be the encryption thing, but that's a different thing altogether in my eyes.
Are you guys ready?
Go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's totally different to the previous recording. It's I think that's mystery solved for the majority of XM right there.
Yeah, it's just getting it set in the right way so it has that cyclical feedback and then it's perfect.
Yeah. And that sort of stuff. Looks like I'm going to have to get two radios then and looks like I'm going to have to create some of that for me music.
Okay, guys, believe it or not, we've been blabbering away for about an hour and 20 minutes now. So with recordings, this is going to be one of the longest podcasts we've done.
And rightly so, because we've been away for a while and there's been a bit of activity. And hopefully our listeners want a longer one. So here you have it, our official return to the airwaves.
Yep, indeed. So we should probably get close to wrapping it up. So I'm going to say, guys, what else would you like to speak about before we move on to the finish?
Well, there was only one more thing to mention from the scripts anyway, so I'll throw it out there. And it's something that I got a record of. Linas gave the shout, so props to Linas for the find. His shout in IRC was, does anyone hear that weird music on 6385? So I had an SDR tuned at the time, so I tuned up to 6385 USB. Sure enough, there was a pirate there. Oh, they were using USB. Oh, no, sorry, it was. Wait, was it? Yeah, it was 6385 LSB, sorry. There was a pirate there playing some music. It was sort of 8-bit music, and it was like very sort of nostalgic Nintendo Entertainment System Mega Man kind of music. What did it remind you of again, Web?
I can't remember what it did remind me of at the time.
Yeah. There was a game you mentioned anyway that it reminded you of, and rightly so.
Oh, V.
That's the one. And it's some cool 8-bit music for a little while. And then the pirate signs off with XPA2, which was a nice little surprise for us because we didn't expect it, of course. We were just thinking he was playing some crazy music. And the podcast's coming to a close now. We have a good closing song that's to do with radio anyway, but I'll play the recording now, or at least I'll splice it in because it's like 6 minutes long and it needs cutting down. But we'll put a recording of that in because it was quite sweet. And that pretty much wraps up what we've got in the script anyway. So anyone else has any closing words?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, looks like that about wraps it up then.
Okay, in that case, thank you very much for listening. It's really good to be back. I've gotten how much you enjoyed doing a podcast, actually. We definitely have to do this more often. Yeah, we're on to 2012. Freeom's going from strength to strength. We're all back with enthusiasm. And we've got a lot of new things to cover. We've started to integrate 4D's naming system. You know, things are just moving on. So come and join us. You know where we are, the IRC, the podcast, the website. Get involved. Get yourself a radio. Get listening. Get logging those stations for us. The more we cover, the more interesting things we can talk about. It'd be good to have you, so join us.
Yep, we're always on the hunt for new members, people who are into radio, people who've got time to do some monitoring. Even if you don't have much time, you know, whatever you have is cool with us. If you want to get in, have some good chats about radio, if you want to solve some mysteries about radio, come join us in the IRC.
Yep, and I think that wraps it up for tonight. So let's say goodnight, everybody.
Yep, it's goodnight from Grass.
Goodnight, everybody.
Dobrye noc.
Danix, Troyan, you still awake? It's time to say goodnight.
Danix is muted and deafened. And I believe Troyan may be sleeping.
I think Troyan's got so much PHP bulletin board code in his head, he can't actually speak.
No, too many languages going around all at once. So it's good night from Troyan.
It's good night from all of us. Hope to see you again, Shortwave fans. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Good night, Brion.